afterward. With this humiliating and disheartening experience, the manuscript breaks off. In a notebook of jottings written by my father in 1946, I have found a list of section headings for a possible revision of the book to be entitled Dance in the Lion's Den. They give a tantalizing hint of what might have followed. The headings are Catastrophe as Adventure, 1933, Glorious Failure, 1934, Resignation with Obstacles, Unwanted Career, Escape in Slow Motion. My parents did not speak much about this period of their lives, so it is a lasting sadness to me that the later chapters were never written. I can only add very little to flesh out the details. My father had intended to follow a career in law, devoting his spare time to literature. By 1933 he had already written two novels and many shorter pieces, a few of which had been published in the intellectual press. But he abandoned this plan in 1933, and at his father's suggestion decided to write his PhD thesis in Paris, away from the Nazis and close to the girl he loved, Teddy. It was intended as a first step toward emigration, but Teddy had married another man, and my father failed to gain a foothold in Paris, so he returned to Berlin in 1934. He made his living by writing for the arts pages of the better newspapers and for non-political magazines. Many of these had been owned by Jews and were now controlled by the Nazis, but the censorship was subtle. The political pages were, of course, heavily censored, but the arts pages could completely ignore the Nazis if they wished. They must only avoid direct criticism. In this atmosphere my father wrote harmless, slightly snobbish, his own word, pieces about fashion, or horses, or places he had visited. When talking about this period, he used to say that he had seen no possibility of direct resistance to the Nazis, but that he was determined to write nothing that he would have to be ashamed of when they had been defeated. In the editorial offices, almost all of his colleagues were anti-Nazis. Initially, there were even still some Jews among them. They relished the sly hints of opposition that they smuggled into their texts, but when the paper appeared the following day, it was evident that the insider references failed to subvert the Nazi impression of the paper as a whole. Sometime after his return from Paris, my father met my mother, who was Jewish, by race though not by tradition or religion, and had recently separated from her first husband, a press colleague of my father's. She had a young son, my half-brother Peter. Although he was of Jewish descent, Peter was blonde and blue-eyed, and was quite often photographed as the ideal Aryan child. My mother had been the librarian of the Hochschule für Politik, an institution a little like the London School of Economics, and had lost her job because of her race. My father soon moved into her flat, but, of course, they could not marry because of the race laws. Indeed, even cohabiting with a Jew was an offence, but for some reason the Nazi block warden responsible for their flat liked and protected them. My father made a good living, and even became editor of one of the magazines he had been writing for. Politically, however, life became progressively more difficult. The ambivalence of his position rankled more and more, and the free space for manoeuvre became ever narrower. Early in 1938, my mother became pregnant, with what would become me, and this made my parents' situation truly dangerous, quite apart from the fact that the war was looming. I think my father had been planning to emigrate, but his experience in Paris in 1934 had caused him to hesitate. Now hesitation was no longer an option. The clock was ticking. My mother's brother, Kurt Hirsch, had emigrated to England in 1934 and had completed a PhD at Cambridge and embarked on a university career there. I'm not absolutely sure of the details of my mother's emigration, but I believe she first tried to get a visa for Britain armed with a phony job invitation and a promise from her brother to cover her costs. I know that she was flatly turned down and came home in despair. My father comforted her, and told her to try again with a direct appeal to the truth. She might come before a sympathetic official. So a little later she made herself up to look as smart as she could, took Peter along and tried again. This time she was successful, and at the beginning of June she left for England. My father remained in Germany and had to find a different method of escape, without acknowledging his liaison with my mother. He arranged for a commission to write a series of articles on some harmless English topic. On the basis of this commission, he obtained a 6-week visa and arrived in England on August the 29th, 1938. The first thing my parents did was to marry, and I was born a few weeks later in October 1938. I have a letter in which my father reveals to his mother, living as a widow in Berlin, first that he has married, then that he has a son, then that his wife is Jewish, and finally that he has left Germany for good. British officials did not view the matter in which my father had come to England with favour, and he had difficulty renewing his visa, even though, by marrying my mother, he had lost his German nationality and committed a felony under German law. It was at first renewed for a month or two at a time, but by the winter the excuse about the series of articles had worn thin, and there was a real possibility that he might be deported. In the meantime, he had to make a living. In the spring of 1939 he wrote to Frederick Warburg with a synopsis of this book. In the second volume of his memoirs, Warburg recalls, "By the spring of 1939, he, Hafner, was almost at his wit's end, and in desperation had written to me sending the synopsis of a book he planned to write. Hafner's book was to be a political autobiography. I remember it as the most brilliant synopsis ever put before me." Frederick Warburg, All Authors Are Equal, London, Hutchinson, 1973. In spite of the financial difficulties his publishing house, Secker & Warburg, was experiencing, Warburg offered my father a retainer of £2 per week to complete the book. After the war, my father wrote to Warburg, "Never in my life, before or after, did I feel such relief." Warburg also helped with the problem of my father's visa. In a family letter of June the 13th, 1939, my father writes, "Today I have been rescued from great fear and depression. The Home Office has relented after representations by Ursel, a sister of my mother's, and a very strong letter from Warburg in praise of my literary capacity and sterling character. They have given me a year on condition that I do literary work solely on behalf of Messrs. Secker and Warburg." With the outbreak of the war, understanding why the Germans had become Nazis became a somewhat academic question. More urgent was the problem of how to deal with them. My father abandoned this project and started a new book. It was written in German, but from an English point of view. Its subject was how the war might be won, and what should be done after victory had been achieved. Warburg writes, "This book, defying Hitler, was never completed. When Hafner was halfway through it, the war broke out, and he felt he must write something less private and more directly political. In the late autumn of 1939, he sent me several chapters of A Survey of Germany. I also suggested a change of title to Germany, Jekyll and Hyde, which suited the book to perfection." A letter of my father's, dated October the 6th, 1939, gives more detail. "Personally, I have now started a second book of at most 200 pages, beside my main one, Defying Hitler, which is already 270 pages long. It is to be called Germany, A Survey. It is intended as a handbook for English propagandists who have to know about Germany, but also for the general reader. I will keep the tone calm and unpolemical and not make my heart a nest of vipers. What do you think?" At that time, my parents were living in a tiny terraced house in Cambridge. Soon, the Germans in Britain, now enemy aliens, were interviewed and categorized according to the danger they might represent. My uncle and my mother came into the safest category, C, but because of the manner of his entry, my father was classed in the riskiest category, A, and was interned in a holiday camp in Seaton in South Devon at the start of 1940. It was run by the army, who appointed the only real Nazis among the internees as block leaders. That was the most unpleasant thing about internment, living under the very people he had emigrated to get away from. It was well organized, and the detainees were well fed, but the camp was designed for summer vacations. It was January, and the chalets in which they were housed were unheatable. In February 1940, during a morning muster, my father was called forward and handed a telegram announcing the birth of my sister, Margaret, now Sarah Hafner. My father was released from Seaton in April, after Warburg had made representations to the Home Office. Not long afterward, the Battle of Britain began, and enemy aliens of all categories living within a certain distance of the coast were interned, this time on the Isle of Man. Organization was a shambles, because the island was not prepared for such a large influx. The men and women were at opposite ends of the island and had little communication. However, the atmosphere appears to have been friendly, and the weather was warm. My father had completed the new book just before his internment in January, and Warburg published it in June. Because he feared reprisals against his relatives in Germany, my father dropped his real name, Raymond Pretzel, and chose a pseudonym, Sebastian Hafner, which he kept for the rest of his life. When asked about it, he would explain that the name had to satisfy three conditions. It must be clearly German, not Jewish, and easy to pronounce for English speakers. The names themselves are from Johann Sebastian Bach and Mozart's Hafner Symphony.